This podcast is presented by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, safer, healthier people.
Thank you very much for a great introduction, and thank you to Janice Nall for making today's symposium possible. I just want to tell you that in this room today, I feel the energy and power to change our healthcare system and to improve human life greatly. We all share a common goal of saving lives and reducing suffering. With this, I would like to share with you a couple of thoughts on the future of health technology, share some information about meeting of European ministers of health where I was invited to represent US, very interesting perspectives from there. And eventually, I'd like to show you two examples of technologies that are very important, I believe, in the form of video clips from Professor Pendland, who would like to be here today but couldn't attend. Most important trend that health technology is experiencing now is a convergence of life sciences and computer sciences. This merger in the nearest future, or well, I guess long-term future, given objectives of your organization, will evolve into some kind of new life form. Professor Warwick will tell you more about it later, and Professor Minsky will have his own opinions on it. But we have to get ready. It's not science fiction. The machines that we're creating will have greater intelligence that we do, or very different one, very different way of reasoning. They will be able to reason in multiple dimensions, while we humans have some limitations in our cognitive capacities. So we should think about laws introducing features in our in the software that we create that would have a that would say explain this in human terms. This way we'll assure that the human race is not behind. Well, we also should emphasize, I believe, the computer science of the equation, since life sciences, from the first patent on living organism in 1971, if you measure progress and innovation in the number of patents, increased to about 500,000 applications for that kind of patent by 1995. Computer science side of the equation is, I believe, underestimated. That's the real bottleneck of our progress. Hardware-wise, we have nearly infinite capacity. All the exponential growth graphs are on that side. But in software development, we do need new methodologies for software development. We need the way to overcome complexity ceiling, and we need to change software industry so computer errors are not a feature. We now expect that in all computer programs. It's called a bug. We do need a lot of investment in that part of the equation. And to tell you about Malaga meeting in Spain, which was called eHealth high-level meeting, looking at the convergence of the two, European research and development is putting a lot of emphasis between the years 2007 and 13, so the next 7 years, on development of what they call human physionome, which is digital human, simulation of digital human, a model of human body down to hopefully cellular level, so we can not only extract patterns and trends from massive amounts of health information, but we can also test hypotheses and theories on that artificial digital human being. So that's the R&D research trend in Europe. Well, to summarize, global eHealth understood broadly is as important to human health in the 21st century as microbiology was in the 19th century and genetics in the 20th century. To start with e-health today, the major goal is actually 100% penetration of technologies that are tested, well established and available. Health information networks, online health, telemedicine, automatic speech recognition, data mining, population health databases, wireless and wearable technologies, and even simple electronic data interchange. I spent 15 years working with healthcare organizations around the world trying to implement those technologies, and the progress was really slow. So I started to organize summits to hopefully introduce breakthrough ideas, and thinking about the future may actually change the way we perceive our today. And many healthcare providers organizations, once you share the vision of possible futures, they get excited about implementing technologies that are available today. So that's the plan. Those technologies, I believe, are very important. They are life-saving. They decrease costs and improve efficiency, but they are incremental in nature. To get to something that I call intelligent and intelligent health environment, we need to grasp some of the ideas that today's speakers will be talking about. Affective intelligent caring creatures, biosensors everywhere, flexible mobile displays that would allow creating healing environments with programmable walls that would make people feel relaxed or at home in the hospital room, for example. Well, humanoids and cyborgs are at this point implantable devices are part of technologies that will create that intelligent and intelligent health environment. Eventually, of course, genomics and bioinformatics will play a big role. That will create a world, healthcare world, where a nurse will be capitalized, as you see on the slide here, and it will stand for New Unifying Resource Systems Engineer. That's the new acronym for capitalized nurse. And that nurse will have a computer science background, and she will be, or he will be, responsible for maintenance and development of caring machines, not necessarily taking care directly of the patients. This will be delegated to robots. A doctor of the future will actually be an effective intelligent caring machine, or in the less futuristic scenario, that will be the aid that a physician could be using on a daily basis. It would have knowledge of many best physicians from around the world. It would be empathetic and available at all times, whenever you need it, helping with those decisions that we heard this morning. Hospital of the future, I like to call intelligent caring continuum. It won't be just one place. It will be the dynamically assembled set of resources that are personalized and available as we need it. And eventually, I created this new term, health matician. You may help me to find a better word, but we need a new role, a new job description for a new profession, closing the gap between acute care of physicians and nurses and social services. Health matician, because of the massive amounts of data that pretty soon we'll be able to collect on humans in the sick and well state. So health matricians will have to be equipped in computational skills and models that will allow us to learn from all the data we collect about our life. Well, it's all great, but which ideas are actually worth investing in? How to give ideas with biggest impact a chance? How to evaluate impact of those ideas for the future? How can we invest a couple of billions to save hundreds of billions and many human lives? And that's the question that I hope to That's the answer to this question. I hope to hear from you. You are in charge. We are just helpers here. I started to think about that with the help of my mentor, Professor Marvin Minsky, with whom I studied at MIT. And since 1996, we bring together creative minds to annual Future of Health Technology Summit. And to answer that question mark, we need to have a very strong goal created. So I express it in this form. Stop disease before it even begins. Stop suffering before tears occur. Stop symptoms before they hurt. Stop medical errors before they kill. Stop cyborgs before they control us. Future of Health Technology Institute tries to achieve this by beginning to think about long-term global future on an ongoing basis. It's a kind of socio-technological process, not one-time event, and I encourage you to... you're doing it already, but maybe we can do something interesting together. Beginning to manage randomness in technology and creation and adoption process. Beginning to address health crisis as a national and international emergency. And it is an emergency. People are dying today because of lack of use of those technologies. Beginning to design intelligent and intelligent health environment with caring machines. And our judges are actually now babies. They are not grown-ups. Little Johnny, who experienced miracle of robotic surgery, and you see that little cut on his chest, it would have been huge if it wasn't done by the robot. He's already enjoying the benefits of well-made healthcare resource allocation decisions. What I'm proposing here also is in introducing a new definition of medical error, not focusing on how many people we hurt, but how many people we are not helping with what we have. So intergenerational error, where the younger generation will be judging us in maybe 50 years or so, is as follows. Error occurs if we could have had a positive impact on population's health, but we failed to do so because of inappropriate allocation resource. And we're here now in this room, we're thinking about that. To answer that question mark is what is most important. Individual error occurs when we could have had a positive impact on person's life under current state of medical science, knowledge, and resources, but we failed to do so. So the emphasis would be on, actually the assumption would be that we already have errorless healthcare in current understanding of the word error. We do not heal and hurt people by mistakes. At summits, we spent some time brainstorming and in the two publications that you saw, the two book covers on the previous slide, outline unsolved healthcare problems and health challenges, and there are many of them. I would like to focus just on two today and show you how two specific technologies can help with those challenges. So monitoring and early detection of depression and mental disease, which is leading cause of disability and major problem by 2020, is one of them, an aging population with cognitive decline. At the last meeting, I have the second problem addressed here. So memory glasses is a project by Professor Pendland from MIT Media Laboratory. And you will see the video clip that shows the tool that basically prolongs and gives a humane way of dealing with memory loss.
As we age, many of us notice that we don't remember things quite as well as we used to. We might forget anything from someone's name to where we put our car keys. At an international conference on Monday, scientists at MIT are presenting a new invention that helps people improve their memory without really doing anything at all. That's today's HealthBeat report.
I can see near without a glass, but I can't see far away.
I'm very nearsighted.
I can drive or... even see a blackboard without them.
Most people wear glasses to see better, but these are a bit more high-tech.
If you almost remember somebody's name, this can provide a little bit more kick to that
so that you in fact do remember their name.
They're called memory glasses, a vision MIT scientists are developing to help people with a range of problems.
Poor eyesight of various sorts, including cataracts, poor memory, which includes beginning stages of Alzheimer's.
Whatever you need to remember is programmed into a tiny computer that you wear. The computer sends messages in the form of light to a mini TV screen on the glasses. The messages, like someone's name or a word like keys or medicine, flash before your eyes at 1/180th of a second, too fast for the eyes to notice, but not the brain.
Our test has shown a 50% better memory with these than without. And the thing that's interesting is people aren't even aware anything is happening. They're just better.
Researchers are testing the glasses on patients with memory disorders. They could even help those who've suffered strokes or have amnesia.
And of course, like all electronics, it'll shrink down to the size of nothing in the next couple years.
Memory glasses are made by a local company called Micro Optical, but they are not on the market just yet. Scientists say that could take a couple more.
That's an example of technology that is non-obtrusive, helps, and has to be further developed. Decisions have to be made how to use ideas like that and to develop them further or not, and very important problem, how to make them affordable, how to make them available to populations, not just keeping them in the lab as a research project. The second example of the project deals with depression.
The face of medicine is expected to be very different in years to come. This week, scientists are getting a peek at some of the changes on the horizon, thanks to an event at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. NECN Health and Science reporter Anya Haneke has details.
What if the ever-popular cell phone, the little device many of us have come to rely on to help us speak our minds, had a mind of its own? Sounds a little far-fetched. But Sandy Pentland of MIT is working on something of the sort, a cell phone that can measure a person's emotions and determine when they're depressed.
We found that you can indeed measure how depressed somebody is from very simple things, the way they talk and the way they move.
Pentland has designed a cell phone with a depression meter. As you talk, it measures the tone of your voice signals and rates how depressed you are.
A little bit of feedback, a little bit of objective feedback that says, hey, you sound sort of depressed, what's going on, can give people that external view that they need to be able to know that, hey, this isn't right.
This type of technology, Professor Pendel, extends to social interactions too, and that technology has great potential for early detection of even epidemics like SARS based on preconditions, not necessarily people showing up in emergency rooms. So if we use technologies like that, we can collect data about preconditions of diseases that hopefully will stop disease before it even occurs.
To access the most accurate and relevant health information that affects you, your family, and your community, please visit www.cdc.gov.